is, I know I'm not going to say this right, Sun Madonis versus AMC LLC et al. I know that we do have pro bono attorneys as well. Mr. Hutchins, right? Marga, no, Hutchins, sorry. I don't have my reading glasses on. Thank you. So thank you for your pro bono efforts. We do appreciate that. And of course, thank you, too, for coming in here today. Would the appellant then like any rebuttal time on this at all?
Yes, Your Honor, 5 minutes, please.
5 minutes, sure. So whenever you're ready to start, case number 71072, we will start. Make sure that both sides state the names for the record, and I guess I should have said on the last case of Bauer versus State will stand submitted. I forgot to say that.
Maybe we could start with the correct pronunciation of the appellant's name, because all of us would have a hard time with this one.
I'm going to try to say it correctly as well. May it please the court, my name is Marla Hutchins, and I'm here to represent Andre Simeonidis. The district court in this case improperly granted summary judgment in favor of the respondents. By doing so, it denied my client a jury trial in a case where he was savagely attacked just feet from his apartment complex. He suffers injuries still today and has no way of holding the apartment complex liable for those injuries. Summary judgment was improper for two reasons. The first is that the district court applied the incorrect standard of the law for foreseeability. And the second is that the district court improperly set a bright line standard for expert testimony, requiring essentially that an expert be retained in every case involving negligent security. I'll address each of these issues in turn. Under premise liability concepts, landowners have a duty to exercise reasonable care to keep their premises safe from harm. With respect to criminal acts, landowners ordinarily have no duty to prevent them, except when they are reasonably foreseeable. In Dowd versus Las Vegas Hilton Corporation, the Nevada Supreme Court considered two different tests for foreseeability. The first was the traditional view, and that is where a plaintiff is required to set forth proof of prior similar incidents or crimes to show reasonable foreseeability. The second test is the modern rule, which looks at the totality of the circumstances, not simply prior similar crimes.
The court considered what you filed, Humphreys versus New York, as a supplement. How do we consider that right now, since Rehearn's been filed and presumably, you know, in light of the October 1st events, how can we expect that New York wouldn't be filing another request for en banc consideration? How do we even take that into account right now?
Absolutely. And the way that you can consider that case is that it's consistent with what the ruling was in Dowd. But in the New York case, the Nevada Supreme Court is being asked to interpret a statute, NRS 651.015. That statute doesn't apply in this case, but the principles are still the same. What the court was looking at was foreseeability, and that is whether the defendant, or in this case the apartment complex, would have reason to believe that there was a likelihood of harm to Mr. Simeonidis. The court has applied the totality of circumstances in other cases in Nevada, including Scaliata versus Brandeis Construction. In that case, the court found that an assault was reasonably foreseeable, even though at that particular location, there were only incidences of theft. In other cases across the country where there have been similar incidences of crime, that has not been the threshold question. The question is, under all of the circumstances present, was there a likelihood of harm? And so even in Humphreys, some of the same factors that other courts have considered appeared, including the location of the complex, the level of violence, security implications involved, how big the premises were, what types of crimes were there, things of this nature. In this instance, the apartment complex has an incredible history of crime. It's not just minor break-ins. On pages 22 and 23 of my opening brief, I presented a chart of all of the crimes that occurred in the months and years leading up to this. They involved a fight with 20 people that involved guns, other gunfire, vandalism, property damage, breaking and entry, property damage to a police vehicle when the police were there present at the property to inspect a separate crime. There was also, within months and years after the incidents, other very horrendous crimes. The criminal activity was so routine at the Lantana apartment complex that Metro had a direct relationship with the complex. Metro's officers had email communication with the complex saying that they regularly did in-person stops in and around Lantana regularly. So to suggest that this is a safe environment, to suggest that there were only minor break-ins, simply is contrary to the record. The purpose of a foreseeability test is to determine whether the harm could have been avoided. That brings up the next subject, which is expert testimony. There is no bright line test.
Back on the last point, how do you think the district court came to the conclusion that there were only minor break-ins and thefts? Wasn't it in the record? Was it properly in the record? I mean, the record is supposed to be interpreted in favor of the party opposing summary judgment. So, where did this come from the district court?
It looked like the district court had put attached as an exhibit the actual break-ins, and yet it only focused on no other skinhead violations.
I absolutely agree, and that's the precise problem that we have here. Even if there were no other skinheads, in Dowd versus Hilton Las Vegas, the court held that there was a likelihood another patron could be endangered, quote, even if it had no reason to expect it on the part of a particular individual, meaning there didn't have to be a skinhead crime in order to see that there's a likelihood of crime.
Well, so here's the thing. Taking your argument kind of to the extreme a little bit, aren't you kind of saying that if this apartment building were in an area where there's just generally a lot of crime, then all crimes are foreseeable, even if they're different in kind? I mean, at some level, that's not true, right? Here's the most outrageous hypothetical I could think of. It's a high crime area, there's lots of beating, shooting, stabbings, drug use, that kind of thing, burglaries. And then one day somebody detonates a nuclear bomb there. At some point, it's not foreseeable because that's so different, right?
Right, and that's part of the test, right? Is for example, the security implications involved. What we're talking about here, and I say that because that was raised in the New York case, what we're talking about is exactly what you suggested. In an area that's plagued with crime, there may be a heightened duty to ensure that you're not being held liable for negligence. But in this case, you have an area plagued with crime, and there's very minimal security precautions at all. So even if there's an area plagued with crime and that could be considered reasonably foreseeable, then you move to the next step of the test, which is, was there a breach of the duty of reasonable care? And that's why these two issues are tied so similarly. Because if there is regular crime at your location, just because it's a low-income housing area doesn't make it so that you can wipe your hands clean. In fact, that makes it so that you should do things like installed cameras, that you should do things like consider security all day long, not merely at night. Those are the two things that were missing, for example, in this case. And that's precisely why an expert wasn't required either. Lay people know things like the presence of cameras deter crimes. Lay people also understand things like security patrols during the day would protect against crimes, because crimes don't simply happen only at night. They can occur all day long. And so for that reason, it answers both questions. It answers one, what do you do with the slippery slope argument where everything becomes foreseeable? And that is, you take the precautions at your own establishment to prevent that. If you have regular security, security cameras, the presence of patrols, you can reduce that so that things become more manageable, that you're not held negligent for doing nothing and wiping your hands clean and saying, this is a low-income area, we have no responsibility here. With respect to the expert testimony, as I said, this is purely within the purview of an ordinary jury. Lay people know things about security at hotels, apartment complexes, malls, things of this nature. Courts across the country have even excluded experts, saying that this is not the type of stuff that requires expert testimony. And so, for example, in Ortiz versus New York Housing Authority, the court held that the consequences of the failure to maintain reasonable security in an environment plagued with acts of violence are within the common understanding of the juror. In plenty of cases, as I said, juries were excluded under the same and similar facts. And so the idea that there were no witnesses that could testify in this case as to the duty of care and whether or not defendants, respondents Lantana met that duty of care is simply not consistent with Nevada law. And I'll reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you. All right, from respondent.
Good morning. May it please the court, Reed Wormer on behalf of respondent Lantana Apartments, along with the related entities. The motion for summary judgment in front of the district court was focused on three separate issues. One was foreseeability, one was that this was an intervening, superseding cause, and one was that there was no expert retained.
Can we pick up where we left off on the expert retained? I mean, sure, you have the security doesn't even come on till 8 at night. Here, the plaintiff in this case was attacked at 6 o'clock at night, so there isn't security. There's nothing for an expert to say, gee, below the standard. Why isn't this something that a layperson could determine? I mean, there's no security for them to pick apart what the security did or didn't do. This is, should they have had security or no security? Why does that require expert testimony? And further, in a case here, we have pro bono counsel, it's a low-income area, perhaps it doesn't cost a lot to live there. Do they get less security? Because, or, you know, to hire an expert would cost thousands of dollars. Maybe the insurance companies have it, but the average person doesn't. Why do we need an expert in security on this?
So the reason that we need an expert in this case is quite simply this. At what time does a complex require security? Does that security guard supposed to start at 4? Are they supposed to start at 5? Are they supposed to start at 2?
Why can't a layman just conclude when it gets dark you need a security guard?
Well, it happened in the summer, and here's one of the other problems, okay? They're at the property. The crimes that were occurring were at night, where people were having people break into their car and steal their whatever valuable that they left in the car. So the security was retained to patrol and try and deter that. You can't stop all crime, as we know, but they do have a security patrol to come around and prevent or attempt to prevent the most common crime. The expert would be needed to say, in this area, having a security guard at nighttime is insufficient. You need to have a security guard that is there 24 hours a day. You need to have not one patrol, you need to have two. You need to have three patrols because the property is so big. You need those patrols to be armed, or you need to have those patrols to have something more than a flashlight. That's why we need an expert, because an expert is going to say, based on the crime in the area, and they would have pulled the crime reports, not just the incident reports from the complex, but the crime reports of the entire area, and said, look, based on what we observe as this being a high crime area or a low crime area or moderate crime area, this is the level of security that would be appropriate based on that. This is how many security guards you would need, this is what time they should start, and this, an expert also could have been the one that would say the standard of care for an apartment complex is that you do this analysis and you figure this out. They didn't.
Okay, but you can still present that, all of what you just said, to a jury, and they can still just present nothing. And technically, maybe it's going to be better for your client anyway because you have an expert. But why would summary judgment be proper just because, as a matter of law, they don't have an expert on security?
You're asking the lay jurors to speculate as to the level of security that is required of an apartment complex. So you need someone who is going to come in and say, this is the standard of care for an apartment complex, this is how many security guards you need, this is what time they should start, this is why that's why expert testimony is required. You don't have, I don't have security at my house, like I don't have a security guard, but maybe I would need one if I thought there was crime. But if some expert tells me, look, there's high crime in your neighborhood, you need a security guard, now I need that. But a normal layperson doesn't know.
If there's a lot of crime in your neighborhood without an expert, you wouldn't know that you need a security guard? Is that what you just said?
Say it again?
If there's a lot of crime in your neighborhood, what it sounds like you just said is, you wouldn't know you need a security guard unless an expert told you you need a security guard.
Well, and maybe I said that, I didn't mean to say that, but I'm saying you can't impose a duty on my client to know how, like, they have security. You're saying that, like, they should have known that their security should have started at 4 instead of at 6. Well, that requires more than just the knowledge of a layperson. That requires an expert to say, actually, the level of crime, the number of crimes committed occurring would justify the person starting earlier as opposed to later. Or they require the security guard to be better trained, or that they have something more than just, you know, a flashlight.
I'm just looking at it in terms of summary judgment.
Right.
Everything's an argument as to facts, which is a good argument if you're making it to a jury. But why, as a matter of law, should a district court grant summary judgment in a case under these types of facts?
Well, what the Nevada Supreme Court case says that an expert must be provided in these circumstances.
Counsel referenced the Humphreys case, for example. In the Humphreys case, the plaintiffs had an expert who said, hey, you had security, but your security was not enough. It should have been closer, there should have been more, they should have had a specific plan. So that is what we're talking about here. You have to have more than just telling the jury, hey, you can speculate and think that the person should have started sooner rather than later.
What I'm asking is, what case in Nevada states that in security cases, as a matter of law, like in medical malpractice, and you have to attach an affidavit, there are certain types of cases which must be, they have to be proven by expert testimony.
Right, and in Nevada.
And where would it be in the world of security, where in Nevada jurisprudence does it say you must have an expert to bring these types of cases? Or summary judgment will be granted against you.
Sure. And there is not a specific case in Nevada addressing negligent security and whether an expert is required. It's just not in our jurisprudence. We don't have a case that says you need an expert, you don't need an expert.
Didn't the district court in its order actually grant summary judgment in part because of that? Because of exactly that argument.
The district court did grant summary judgment in my in my client's favor.
Paragraph 23,
plaintiff cannot establish a duty or breach of a duty because he has no expert testimony.
Right there.
Right.
I mean, I know I read it.
Right, no, and there, that is based on my argument that you cannot have a jury speculate as to the level of security required in an apartment complex. You need somebody to establish what that level of security is that's required. You can't tell a jury that they are free to speculate as to the level of security required or what time that security guard is supposed to start. That's why you need the expert testimony. You need somebody to say, based on the number of crimes or the quality of crimes or whatever in this area, you need to have somebody who says, that means you need to have security guard, 10 security guards, 20 security guards. They have to be armed. They have to start at this time. That's what we're saying. There has to be an expert to explain that. That's not in the canon of a normal juror. A layperson doesn't know that.
What about foreseeability? I think we've covered expert pretty thoroughly.
Okay, and let's address that. In the appellant cites heavily to Dowd and says Dowd is the standard that we should look at for foreseeability. And in the motion for summary judgment and in the argument, we cited to Bauer and said, look, in Bauer, the Nevada Supreme Court lays out the items that you must consider in determining what is foreseeable and what is not. And we discussed each one of those factors in detail, and the district court judge considered those factors and found that this was not foreseeable, based on the fact that this was allegedly a gang of Nazi skinheads that just in broad daylight came out and attacked the plaintiff.
And just because they had SWAT stickers, how do you know they're Nazi skinheads?
He said,
I'm not saying that. I don't know.
That is how they were
described. And I'm pretty sure he wasn't a Nazi skinhead.
Well, that's how they were described to me by the plaintiff, or the appellant in this case, that they were Nazi skinheads. I don't know. I didn't interview them. He didn't report the incident to the police. There's nothing that we can do to verify whether or not they were where they came from, what their belief system was. He said, I was attacked by a group of Nazi skinheads. They had swastikas that they had put on themselves with homemade tattoos, and they attacked me. They took my wallet. They gave me my wallet back after they took the cash because they didn't want my driver's license or my credit cards. They didn't take my cell phone. They went and jumped in a getaway car, and they drove away.
How do you respond to the New York case? I mean, you got three justices. I mean, I know it's all on rehearing, but three justices are sitting there saying that we're not looking at the exact type of crimes. We're looking at, you know, is it generally foreseeable these types of crimes occurring?
So the New York case is distinguishable in two ways. One, this is not an innkeeper case, as the judge determined in a lower court. So that is a different standard that we're talking about. And the other thing is, they had an expert. They had an expert who came in and said, look, this is foreseeable, and this is why. And you should have had more security, and this is why. We don't have that in the case. They didn't hire an expert. They didn't go out and find someone. And this case was not pro bono at the time it was brought. This case was with retained counsel who was pursuing this case for the plaintiff. He was pursuing this claim. He later fired his attorney and sought relief here, partially because there was an agreement to waive his right to appeal in order that we would waive our fees and costs, which we could have requested at the end in the district court. And that agreement was made. It was reduced to an email. This court rejected that and allowed it to proceed. But that was an agreement that was made after the hearing by his counsel, which was retained counsel. The other issue on the motion was that this would have been an intervening, superseding cause.
Here's the problem, right? The question is not whether this crime is foreseeable. It's not whether anyone could have known that at 4 o'clock on January 27th, this particular crime would have been committed by skinheads. That's impossible. The only, you know, every measure of the time proves me to where the site can see every crime, but that's what we need to have that be foreseeable. The issue is there so much previous crime in this area that in response to the previous crime, the landlord should have done something to stop that crime that could have stopped this crime had he done it before this crime occurred? Isn't that the issue?
Well, so
it doesn't matter whether it's a skinhead or not. What matters is whatever he should have done in response to the previous crimes that all happened there, whether it's a fence or a security camera, if he had done that, this crime wouldn't have happened.
Sure, and that would require, like we talked about, expert testimony, because the expert would say, hey, if there's graffiti on the wall and there's break-ins, then you need more security, and you need to have it this time, and then you need to have it that time, and you need to do it this. Maybe you need to put gates up. Maybe you need to put up cameras like counsel suggested. Maybe she wanted 24-hour security. But all of that also costs money, and it also has to be justified. And so in this case, if you want to say that had to happen, where's your testimony that says that? The plaintiff himself, the claimant in this case, cannot say that. He has no security background. He's never worked as an apartment manager. And so what witness is going to say that? What witness is going to say to the jury, these issues, these incidents that happened here justify or cause the need to have additional security measures at the property? There isn't anyone to do that. And that's one of the things that concerned the judge at the district court level was, hey, who is going to say that? We can't have the lady, the plaintiff go on the stand and say, well, they should have done X, Y, and Z without having the qualifications to make such representations. We can't do that. We can't allow that to happen. So who is it?
You could probably say they didn't do X, Y, and Z, not that they had to do X, Y, and Z. Well, said, I didn't see any security. There weren't any fences. There weren't any cameras. I knew there was crime there. I lived there. And I was attacked. And then he has facts that then can be argued to the jury.
So he says...
And they get the custodian records. I mean, obviously they got these records. And they put these records into evidence.
We voluntarily gave them every incident report that occurred. And several of the incident reports that the plaintiff or the appellant cites in the brief and has a reference today occurred after this incident. So you're telling me that the incident of where a man stabs his wife in a domestic violence in 2016 should have put me on notice that in 2013 that this guy would be attacked? That's nonsensical.
There was like 40-something. I don't know how many were before this.
And they
certainly have put, say, 10. And so these 10 instances should have put this landlord on notice that. Why wouldn't a layperson? I guess we're going back to that.
So a layperson is supposed to know that if there are 10 incidences where somebody breaks into somebody's apartment.
Do you know what lay people do? I mean, I had the endoscopy case, okay? It went 4 months. And lay people figure out that, you know, pharmaceuticals and, you know, mLs of propofol, it's too big in a little vial. I mean, it's pretty technical. So I'm not...
But they have experts to explain that to them. They didn't come up with that on their own.
Fair enough.
And I guess I'm out of time, but that's the issue that we have. They lay people do not have the knowledge base necessary for them to include that breaking in and taking the chains out of your thing or stealing your laptop out of your car or vandalizing the laundry room justifies the need for additional security, 24-hour security, cameras, whatever it is that they want to have, that you need to have an expert to say, based on this, you need that.
Thank you so much.
I'm going to start back up with the discussion about experts. The reason why we don't have a case in Nevada requiring experts in negligent security cases is that that's not Nevada's jurisprudence. The jurisprudence requires an expert only if the issues are outside the common knowledge of a layperson. Counsel referenced Humphreys and talked about how there was an expert in that case. And referenced that in that case, there was security during the time of this particular incident. And so an expert was required to talk about whether that security was sufficient under the circumstances. In this case, as Your Honor pointed out, there was no security. And so there isn't an expert that's required to say whether what you did was enough to establish that you met your duty of care. And so in this particular case, there was nothing, as Your Honor pointed out, for the expert to review. The irony in respondent's argument is that respondent itself hired an expert, and that report is found on page 192 of the appendix. And in that expert report, there is nothing to do with the standard of care. Standard of care isn't referenced. Breach isn't referenced. The security protocols that the respondent had weren't referenced. In fact, that security report says something to the effect of, there weren't any security reports for me to review at this time. The entire six-page report was focused on whether or not my client reported the crime fast enough. And that was it. That's not the kind of information that is expert-worthy.
At some point, I mean, here's the problem with here's really the question in this case, and this is kind of the flaw in your counterpart's argument. there's kind of a spectrum going on here. At some high-level things, there's things that are clearly outside of the ability of laymen to do. I can't tell you how to analyze NSA chatter to determine when a terrorist cell that has years of planning, you know, is going to launch an anthrax attack. That's the kind of stuff that you need PhDs and code breakers and, you know, supercomputers to do. If you're talking about that, clearly you need an expert. I don't even know how to look at that data. But on the other end of the spectrum, the way other end of the spectrum is this, right? I know that if there's been a bunch of break-ins in my neighborhood, it's probably a good idea for me to lock my door at night. That's the kind of thing that every human being knows. Locking your door is a better idea than leaving your door unlocked. That's just, you don't need an expert to say, hey, literally, I don't need a PhD to tell me locking your door is safer than not locking your door, right? But between those spectrums is, you know, at some point an expert's required, and at some point it's not. And the question is, where does this case fall on that scale?
I would suggest to this court that this case does not require an expert, and here's a couple of reasons why. One, there was no security. There was, at the time, there were no patrols. There were no cameras. There are a number of incidences that occurred day and night. There's a chart, like I said, in page 22 and 23. All of the incidences included in the chart occurred prior to this incident. Other incidences occurred afterwards, and those are used just to show at what point do you get a one free assault rule. Under respondent's argument, you need an expert to tell you when you need security, and I would suggest that that can't be the case. Otherwise, we allow landowners one free assault. In this case, there actually was an expert telling the respondents, hey, you got to step up your security here, and that expert was Metro. Metro was required to do regular routine stops at an apartment complex. That doesn't occur at every apartment complex. Lay people know that. Lay people know that if the police
the better half of his argument is, okay, maybe you don't need an expert to tell you that if there's a lot of crime going on every day repeatedly, that you need to do something. But what do laymen know what to do?
Well, that's a good question, but it's more academic in this case. And I would suggest to you that the reason it's academic is because they did nothing at this point. They only had security at night.
Thank you very much. This case will stand submitted. Again, thank you so much. We've enjoyed the argument from both sides. Both sides did a great job of briefing.